Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Art Detective with me, Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I'm an Oxford art historian, broadcaster and a writer, and I'm your chief investigator of images. Big one today. I was lucky enough to befriend Professor Mary Beard recently. I have always respected her from afar, but once we got to know each other, I respected her even more. She is rightly recognised as a shining light in English academia, and indeed in the representation of women, both on television, in the media, and within our universities. I approached her because I knew she was going to be at the Oxford Literary Festival to talk a little bit about an art type that she loves, an art form that she loves. And I was not surprised when she selected classical sculpture as the topic to be discussed. She covered the images that we're talking about in this podcast in an episode of Civilizations. But what was great in this interview is that we were able to probe deeper, to look into the sort of ideas, mythology that surround images of the female nude, really. It's cutting edge stuff because, of course, it's building on a long tradition of feminist art history that stretches back to the 60s, but it's being applied in new and exciting ways. I thoroughly enjoyed discussing this with her. Hope you enjoy the podcast. There's lots more to come. I am travelling all over the world at the moment and doing lots and lots of programmes for the BBC, which means I'm trying to pick up, hoover up the most exciting podcasts I can wherever I'm going. I'm going to be picking up podcasts in Germany. I'm going to be interviewing Sean Greenley, the Bolton Forger. Lots of exciting stuff to come. There are many ways you can help support what we're trying to do at Art Detective. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. Yanina Ramirez. You can also sign up to our Facebook community, the Art Detective community, so do find us on there. And the big thing we're trying out at the moment is Patreon. It's a chance for us to go ad-free so that you don't get those annoying ads that break up your enjoyment of whatever you're listening to. If you go to patreon.com/artdetective, I really value all of the support you give to us. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Very special day. I'm joined by personal hero. Now, which of your many titles should I use, Mary?
Just Mary, I think. Fine.
Well, I will say Professor Mary Beard.
Okay, darling.
Well known to everybody for your magnificent work, both as an academic and more popular work. I particularly have enjoyed your Women in Power book and all the work you're doing at the moment for forcing feminism forward.
Thank you. We try.
And that's what you're here in Oxford to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm talking about, I'm talking about Women in Power. Actually, sort of, where do we go from here rather than just looking back to the book? But then I am talking to Dim and McCulloch about Cromwell, so there's not all that much feminism in Cromwell.
No, actually, yeah, so you've got a diverse day today, yeah, here at the Literary Festival. But I'm very grateful. I've swooped you out of the green room and asked you to do the Art Detective podcast because you are such an interesting academic in that you move outside of your discipline. You're a classicist, but you, like you say, you're doing Cromwell today. You present front row on the television. You have wonderfully diverse interests. And of course, when you recently did Civilizations, you were touching on art a lot in that, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I always have a foot in classics. So that, because I think you can't just say, oh, I know, you know, kings and queens of England for me now.
I do everything now.
So everything I do comes from a classical perspective. And I think that that's quite helpful, because I think otherwise you might just go off and talk about anything. So I think in Civilizations, sure, we range very widely, but many of the issues that we isolated about looking and how you look and how you think about how people in the past look, that really came from the classical world. And it was great fun to expand outside that and to see the differences and the similarities, to take advice from other people, to find out what experts in other fields thought, but nevertheless coming from a Greco-Roman perspective.
Absolutely. I mean, I share that as a medievalist as well. Once you have your foot in your research base, you make connections that range much more broadly. And I asked you on the train coming up to Oxford today for an artwork that we could use. I'm so sorry I sprung it on you like I did. I'm a naughty girl.
This is the mark. You know, this is like going into an exam when you haven't read the set book. You know, suddenly you think, oh, I'll get to talk to Nina about art detectives. And then she says, oh, but we're going to talk about an artwork.
Yeah, pick one now. but so you did pick an absolute beauty. Tell the listeners what you picked.
I decided that I would pick the statue that is supposedly the first full-sized female nude sculpture in the Greek world, early 4th century BC. Now, it's a kind of very interesting and a very elusive sculpture, because the original was done by famous 4th century BC sculptor called Praxiteles, and it was once stood in a temple in the little town of Knidos on what is now the Turkish coast, but it doesn't survive.
Yes.
So there is my artwork here doesn't exist.
I like that. A virtual artwork. No, it did exist.
It did exist.
And it influenced, didn't it?
And there are also, you know, I think hundreds of later versions. It became one of the really big tourist hits, tourist high spots of the ancient world. I mean, the people of Knidos, this little town, even put it on their coins. Yes. They were so proud of it, right? Yes. So we know quite a lot about it, although intriguingly and sort of frustratingly, the real thing has gone. We don't really know how it went. People think it was eventually taken to Constantinople to be part of the Byzantine Empire and then maybe kind of destroyed in a fire, but actually it's a mystery, it's a real mystery. Yeah. But we do have all kinds of fascinating stories, first of all about how it was commissioned, secondly about how in a sense difficult, edgy, almost outrageous.
Yes, right from the off, wasn't it? Yeah.
And then we have wonderful ancient stories which give us an ancient version of the male gaze. And, you know, if you're as old as me, you thought that, you know, when you were in the 60s and 70s and you were reading feminist art history,
yeah,
and possibly watching John Berger on the television, you thought that it was the modern world that had kind of invented the idea of the male gaze, the idea of the possession of the sculpture, you know, the naked female body in art being something done for men. But we were all wrong to think that it was new in the 60s. It goes back at least 2,000 years.
It was all that sort of viewer awareness that was coming through of how we feel suddenly under the scrutiny of an artwork. But it's so fascinating looking at the sources relating to these sculptures, because Praxiteles made two, didn't he? And this is what's fascinating. Go on, tell me about the two. I love this.
Well, he's got two. He's right at the edge. I mean, there've been male nude naked, I don't know whether you say naked or nude, I don't know. There'd be naked male statues, full size, in the Greek world for as long as we can see sculpture, going back to the 8th century BC. Mm. But the women have always been clothed.
And that's fascinating in itself, Mary, and I'll come back to that because we need to talk about this 4-century delay in the appearance of the female nude.
You know, it's one of the big mysteries of art history, actually. Mm. Yeah. You know, we kind of, you know, people talk about all sorts of big mysteries in Greek art history, like, you know, why does Greek art become naturalistic in inverted commas? You know, no one's ever been able to explain that.
Yeah.
But, you know, why? Why they started doing goddesses, because it's largely goddesses, naked, is something no one has ever properly explained.
Unbelievable, and such an important thing, because I mean, we could put it down to sexual propensities, what people were enjoying in a sexual way within the Greek world, possibly, or the treatment of the female within society, couldn't we? But yeah, it needs exploring more for certain. But these two then, so about this, go on, tell the two.
Praxiteles is the avant-garde artist here.
He's got two
Aphrodites.
He's got just knocked up two enormous sculptures.
Over the last 55 years. One's got clothes on and one hasn't.
Mm.
And it's the island of Kos that gets first choice because they're the first commissioners.
Gosh.
And they look at these and they think, oh, blimey, we can't have a naked one. So they choose the clothed one. And that leaves over for the other eager customer, the town of Knidos, the naked one.
Yeah.
Well, they don't get much choice because that's what's on offer. And of course, the joke is that the island of Kos made the stupidest decision.
Yeah.
Because Knidos, which gets the naked Aphrodite, the first naked Aphrodite, has got itself its tourist attraction for the next 600 years.
Absolutely. So this town manages to secure its reputation, as you say, even including it on the coins. I mean, it becomes Statue of Liberty type thing, doesn't it, for that area? But what's really fascinating for me is the pose. What we can deduce from the sources about how she looks. So she was probably contrapposto, wasn't she? Which is that sort of sideways.
Technical.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm an art historian. Yes, this is the natural sideways pose of the body. And then, but she's got her cloth coming off her, which is this sort of idea of undressing, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of unclear. It's unclear exactly what the original was doing, but from the copies, I think we can be pretty certain that what Praxiteles was doing was finding a way of giving an alibi to the naked sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not just standing there. Say, look at me naked. It is as if we have found her in the midst of an activity which would make that nakedness seem obvious.
Yeah.
So she's certainly got some kind of pot. This is all to judge from the copies. Yeah. She's got a pot next to her feet, and she's got either a cloth or a dress or a towel.
Yeah.
So it looks as if she's sort of... We've come across her by surprise in the act of her taking a bath.
Yep.
So we've not. She's not displaying herself to us. We have. Oh my golly gosh! Found the goddess just as she's finishing her bath.
I mean, it's repeated again and again in art, and it's pornographic in the sense of the titillation of the viewer. It's there to be. You are the peeping Tom. You are the one that has discovered the naked goddess when she doesn't want you to. And even the way we see in later versions, she covers herself, doesn't she? As if it's like, oh no, don't look at me. Oh no. And it is all about that, isn't it? Sort of reveal, conceal.
It's the great fun that the artist has of saying, I'm going to show you something you shouldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tee-hee.
Yeah, exactly.
And just how kind of, you know, just how dangerous is that, because I'm going to invest my full artistic expertise in creating a vision of something you shouldn't be looking at.
Wow, I know. I know, and it's that's what made it such an attraction, I think, as well, isn't it? And there's lots of accounts of people going to see it. Yeah. I told you I was going to ask you about the stain. Yes. Do please tell them about the stain.
It became, this is, the stain is where we join up with the male gaze.
Yeah.
Because it was clearly a tourist attraction. People came all the time. Mm. But there's one really amazing account, which, you know, actually exposes a sexualization of this statue, written by someone who now goes under the very unlikely title of Pseudo-Lucian, which is, that's because this manuscript was found bound up with the works of a 2nd century AD satirist called Lucian.
Great.
No one thinks it's by Lucian, so we call it Pseudo-Lucian, right?
And it was like a pseudo in the name.
It's part of a treatise, really, about sex. It's called Erotes.
Right.
Actually, sex. And it's a dialogue, as these treatises often are in the ancient world. And in part of it, these guys fetch up, talking about sex all the time, at the town of Knidos.
Gosh.
And they go to the temple of Aphrodite to see the statue. And what you need to know is that one of these is a guy who we would call gay, but
yeah.
I think that's kind of anachronistic. He is very into the love of boys, and I mean boys. There's a heterosexual and a celibate. And
wow, this sounds like a joke. The heterosexual
went to a
celibate,
bar, went
into
a bar. And they go to see the statue, and the celibate is very busy being a celibate and kind of peering at the marble and being an art connoisseur, right? While the heterosexual looks at the front of the statue and says, "Oh, you know, you can see that this is, you know, this is what's really, you know, this is where it's at." While the guy who is into the love of boys, and that's the, I'm not hyping it up, that is the Greek term.
Absolutely, yeah.
Looks at the back and is, and while they're engaged in this slightly odd activity, the celibate says, "My goodness me, you can tell this sculpture was really clever, because there's a little stain on the marble here, but it's been hidden just sort of the top of her thigh at the back."
Yeah.
And how brilliant. And meanwhile, the elderly lady caretaker has been listening to this and says, it's not a natural stain in the marble."
Oh my God.
And she says, "Do you want me to tell you how that happened?" And they say, yeah. And she says, "Well, there was once a young man who was fantastically in love with this statue, so in love that he contrived to get himself locked in the temple at night so he could have his way with her. And so he does that. He gets her, but she's marble, so he leaves the mark of his lust,"
oh,
as we
goodness.
Would say politely,
yep.
"on the back of her thigh."
Good grief. I mean, the thing that this all highlights, doesn't it, is the, I mean, it's awful in many ways in terms of the possession of the female form. And it is a long-running theme, isn't it, with sculptors and artists, that they can create the perfect female form and breathe life into it, and it becomes their possession. Yeah. But there's something even darker here, isn't there, which is that she's being attacked.
Yes. I mean, Aphrodite is being attacked.
Yeah.
She's being owned by this guy. Now, the interesting thing is it all goes to the bad, because he runs off and he goes mad and he throws himself off the cliff.
Of course he does. That's what this poor... Yeah, so this boy realises he's found out, doesn't he? And then he throws himself off a cliff,
so
of
it's,
course, yeah.
You know, so it's... nobody comes very well out of this story.
Good grief.
And of course they go on arguing, you know, the Greeks, because, you know, the heterosexual says, "Oh my goodness me, look, it just shows that even a woman in marble can arouse somebody." And the guy into the love of boys says, oh, but look which way he was entering her.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So it doesn't kind of solve their problem. But it just seems to me that when I was a student, I suppose, insofar as we were ever taught this story, which I have to say wasn't much, we just thought of it as a kind of weird tale.
Yeah.
This is the kind of weird things that ancient Greeks say about sculpture. Isn't that weird?
Mm.
And nobody ever, and I didn't make the connection then, but nobody ever pointed out to us the connection that, look, in their terms, what they're doing is talking about what we would call the male gaze.
Absolutely. And I mean, even it crosses into so many different areas, doesn't it, as well? Because what has happened there is that Praxiteles has made a hyper-realistic form, so realistic, so perfect, that it resembles a real woman. So it's a reflection of his artistry, but it's a deity. This is the form that the deity would take when it enters the temple.
Yes.
So there's this very multi-layered sense of possession of the female. Not only is this boy attacking the artwork, but he's sort of going for the goddess. Isn't he?
Yeah.
Am I misinterpreting?
Yeah. No, it's wonderfully layered story, because it's about sacrilege, it's about what realism and art is, it's about all these debates you can have about the boundaries of proper sexual activity. And we really did it an injustice in saying, oh, just a little, what a funny story about that man who tried to sleep, or did sleep with, that's a bit of a euphemism, isn't it?
But, well, violated a statue.
Violated.
You
could say he raped the statue.
Yeah.
That's what he's done.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, again, it's interesting when you look at the history of art. Obviously, classicism, it hangs so heavy over all future Western manifestations of art.
Yeah.
And at the core of that is this realistic representation of the figure.
Yeah.
And then there's this danger zone, which is when a figure is too realistic.
That's right. You can't ever contain it. Once you've made a figure that, in your own conventions, is realistic, because, figures aren't made of marble. But it's
polychrome too, isn't it? We have to remember that it would have been probably polychrome.
We assume that it was painted. How painted it was, that's certainly, it would be unthinkable for it not to have been in some way painted.
And they are strange when you see classical sculptures painted. I think it's still a shock to students when I take them to the museum and go, honestly, the colour, they would have had their cheeks painted in, maybe their irises coloured, maybe some hair painted in. And it's sort of all whitewashed now, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course we like that, you know, very much. You know, if you show a group of students, I'm passing the buck here, if you show a group of academics a load of pictures of a reasonable restorations of the tonality of ancient sculpture, they'll think, oh my god.
I know, right? How garish. Yeah, always. And medieval too. I mean, so much colour's lost from the past.
Yeah.
And it is, it's a garish and unsettling thing. We're sort of Protestant in our tastes now, aren't we?
I still think that the jury is still out a little bit for quite how garish.
Okay.
Because I think the people who are very into colour, and they must in a sense be right, but in a sense part of their fun is to make us say, oh no, right?
Exactly. Okay.
And, you know, when you look at, say, Roman poetry, and they talk about marble
purity, don't they?
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good point.
And so there's more to this than meets the eye.
That's really interesting. There's lots more work that needs to be done, for sure. I think that we could talk endlessly. I know you have to get off, because you are on stage in the Sheldonian very soon. But there are so many wonderful things that we could discuss further. The male gaze in particular, I think, is... We'll have to do another one, won't we?
Well,
let's
we
do
will.
One with a big bottle of wine between us.
Yeah, oh,
and have
even bigger.
Even bigger than the one we have. Yes, we shouldn't give that away. We are nursing a glass of wine, Art Detective listeners. Such a pleasure, Mary. I hope to see you again really, really soon. And if people want to follow you, what's your Twitter handle?
Oh, it's @WMaryBeard.
@WMaryBeard. And you can follow me at at Dr. Yanina Ramirez, Yanina spelled with a J. Also, why not consider becoming a patron of the podcast? You will get access to loads of extra exciting things. Mary, it just remains for me to say thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Let's do it again soon.
Let's.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.